following program contains strong language and nudity.
Popular music, a plethora of poetic pondering. Add in an abundance of annoying alliteration. As so many ask, what becomes of the brokenhearted? Will you still love me tomorrow? How deep is your love? How much is that doggy in the window? What's new, pussycat? Do you really want to hurt me? And what so many of us yearn to know, do you know the way to San Jose?
I'm Scott Edward Phelps.
And I'm Dave Simmons.
And our pondering is more primal. And for the next hour or so, join us as we seek an answer to the only question that we believe matters in popular music.
Why, God, why?
Yeah, what he said. This week on the Audiophiles.
It's starting our favorite show.
Oh, you like good music. That sweet soul music.
Scott Edward Phelps.
America's favorite old fart.
His past is a mystery, but his work is already a legend.
Dave Simmons.
He's very fussy about his drums. They loom large in his legend.
Chicks dig me because I rarely wear underwear.
Two honest, intelligent men.
Two guys who know tunes. Talking tunes.
Do you expect me to talk?
No.
I expect you to.
The Audiophiles.
Now, here comes the music.
You know what I mean.
I have a pen. I have an apple. Apple pen. I have a pen. I have pineapple. Pineapple pen. Apple pen. Pineapple pen. Pen pineapple. Apple pen. P-A-P.
What the hell is that?
Well, it's not about the what this week. It's about the why. Why, God, why? A few years ago, a British music journalist compiled a list of 337 nominations for the worst songs of all time. One 1971 pop music standard showed up honestly and regularly in the responses. But the opinions, and this will come as a shock to you these days, were split right down the middle. That standard and those split decisions is first up and at this week's top of the chart.
Here's the top of the charts.
The Audiophiles.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Oh my God, the anthem of a lifetime showed up on the list, and half the people said, quote, for example, I won't mention names because it doesn't matter here, but here's some random thoughts that were in this comment thread of this thing this journalist did. One lady said, I thought I was the only one who can't stand to hear this song. It's so depressing, and I practically break my leg running to change the radio station when it comes on.
Wow.
Another guy said, and I thought this was kind of me. He said, I thought it was great when I was a kid. But I listen to it now, and it sounds like it was written by a six-year-old.
Well, yeah.
All right, but there's a thing. On the other side, the fans said positive sentiment, loving nature, and one name here because I just like this name. Some lady named Deborah Lindo Zing with two Gs.
Zing.
Zingaga. Called it, quote, a prophet's message. So no hanging out in the basement waiting for the Hot Pockets to come from Mama from that one. But the point of it is, and not to wander down the path, because this week our episode is Why God Why, songs that we believe, and again, big asterisk from the get-go, lists and opinions are always subjective.
Yes.
So if you get outraged at one opinion or the other, that it doesn't agree with what you think about the song, then by all means, email Dave and
yes.
Let him deal with that shit.
It's not only the song, it could be the choice of the song. It could be the performance of the song.
That's right.
It could be, It could be. It could be.
Sure. And all I'm trying to say is I don't want to be bothered with being complained at, so do that.
I love complaints. Let Dave send them my way.
Well, that's why we get along so well. And that particular example is only kind of a preamble to the conversation, and that would be what we consider, quote-unquote, to be songs that are legitimately tagged as...
What the f***?
Or, as we like to put it more delicately...
My God, what?
Some of our own personal nominees? Look at there. They're in the stacks.
Yo, DJ, play my funky tune.
I wish I had a record like that.
Play it for her.
Don't make any noise when the music's playing.
Play it for me.
I don't like any noise when the music's playing.
Play it.
In song form.
Wax on.
The audio files.
And the hits just keep on coming.
And like we do every week, we've compiled little mini lists of the songs that we think fall into the category of Why God Why.
Why God Why?
Dave's first up, and his kicks off with, I call this, a festive thorn in your sleigh seat.
That's this song perhaps bothers me more than any song that's ever been recorded in the history of music.
Well, we're going to find out why momentarily. It's a classic that needs no introduction, although we just kind of sort of halfway gave it. And it needs no more than, and I clocked it in the edit, 45 seconds to make Dave's point.
Happy Christmas, Luna.
Happy Christmas, Miles.
Happy Christmas, Daddy and Mommy.
So this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so this is Christmas, and so this is Christmas. What have we done?
Okay.
The look on Dave's face is, I wish we did video. And by the way, I just want to say real quickly, I think your problem is that you just don't like Chrissy Teigen, but I don't like her either.
So I don't like her, but no, I mean, just the intro of that song gives me douche chills. I mean, I swear to God.
Well, they're just paying tribute to John and Yoko saying yes, Merry Christmas to the children.
But when John and Yoko did the song, it was great. I mean, John Legend is a good artist in his own right.
Yeah.
I don't know why I asked to ruin John Lennon song.
Well, much, you know, like Will Smith, he made a poor choice when it came to a marital partner.
Yes,
just
yes.
Saying.
But and the over exaggerated vibrato on his voice. So this Christmas.
That's Lee Greenwood syndrome.
Oh my God, that song grates me so bad.
That version of that song.
The version of that song.
All right, there you
no,
go.
No, we I love Lennon's version. Okay. Yeah.
You don't think the little kid saying daddy and mommy is cuter than
No. I even like Yoko's high whiny pitch voice, you know, singing War Is Over If You Want It in the original version.
I don't like the version either, but what tickled me was, and I hadn't listened to it, thanks to you, I had to listen to it again this week, but I hadn't listened to it for a long time, and what made me laugh was what I call the Tonight Show ending.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So this is Christmas. Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun. And up next on our show, The Bicyclists Forever. All right, so Dave says...
Why, God, what?
All right, number two on his list of faves, and I'm inclined to agree with that and say, okay, here we go. And there's a double question. It's not only why, God, why, and or...
What the f***?
It's also, to my way of thinking, for God's sake, man, if you want the Bee Gees, go listen to the Bee Gees. You don't need it done this way. Finish. There it is.
Jesus God.
All right. I'm not defending that because it does absolutely nothing for me whatsoever, but we have to, in context, say that that's from a live concert in Brisbane, Australia, which was the homeland
of the Bee Gees.
Of the Gibb Brothers.
Yeah.
And so it's,
but you're
playing to the crowd.
You're the boss. You're Bruce Springsteen. If you're the boss, you play the boss's songs.
Have you ever heard the song, Randy Newman's song called My Life is Good?
Yes. Yes.
Where he does the little talking piece at the beginning and or in the middle, and he talks about how, and we were in a hotel room with somebody pretty famous, and he said, "Hey, here's a guitar I like." And the name of that person was Mr. Bruce Springsteen. And he looked at me and said, "Ran, I'm tired. How would you like to be the boss for a while?"
I don't get the crowd. I don't get the whole Springsteen thing anyway. I've never really liked it. I get that he's a good songwriter, you know, very much like Bob Dylan. I don't want to hear him sing his own songs, let alone anybody else's. So, but yeah, it just, why, God, why?
Again, not defending, analyzing, I guess, if I was a psychiatrist trying to explain to the court why the person went berserk and killed the song, it's because they were in Australia and they were playing.
It doesn't mean you have to murder a BG song.
No, but the audience was.
The only good point in the song was when the audience drowned him out. That was the only good point of the song. So.
Then, in terms of Dave's third choice for the Why God Why list, when you say to yourself, you listen to Bruce Springsteen and the band trying to do Stayin' Alive, Why God Why? And you say to yourself, well, it doesn't get any worse than that. Well,
it does.
Guess again. Jump.
Thank you, David. Good job, guys.
David Lee Roth, ladies and gentlemen, and I have to tell you something. I want to thank you personally because until this past week, I'd never heard that before.
Really?
And
oh, he damn made the you. Circuit. Yeah, he made the circuit with that for a hot minute. When you know he craves the limelight. So
No.
Why would you write a perfectly good song and then ruin a perfectly good song that you had written? But that makes no sense at all.
Well,
you know,
yeah. I had three thoughts that I jotted down very quickly.
Go ahead.
Just, you know, Rorschach type as I listened to this. And I also watched the video. That's from a Tonight Show episode when Jay Leno was still on the Tonight Show. Because he's the one at the end saying, "That's right, Jim!" You know, in that Jay Leno voice. Three thoughts. One, yes, I would very much like for David Lee Roth to jump off a fucking bridge as soon as possible.
And take the bluegrass players with him.
Well, and this now, in fairness to that, and the second thought was this, here's a chance for me to name drop. They were, in fact, semi-top flight Nashville guys and the backup singers, the Nashville crew. And in fact, one of them, the mandolin player, was and is related to a young lady who's a dear friend of mine from the Nashville days. It's her father-in-law, John Jorgensen.
Oh, yeah.
Who's the guitar guy who's played with Elton John, the guitarist's guitarist, and all the rest of that. And they do, if you listen to them playing, and that's live, it's not lip-synced, listen to them for what it was. If you take the fact that it's a ridiculous notion to do a Van Halen song like that, and then David Lee Roth coming, jump, y'all, with the yeehaw thing, that. But the players, okay, I give them credit. But here's the third thing, and this is the underlying thing. If anybody doubts why the world is a better place without Jay Leno on five nights a week, that right there is singular. Can you imagine Letterman or Colbert or anybody with any kind of late night talent
having that kind of shit on their show for a single second, unless it was a gag.
Right. I mean, Fallon might do it as a gag, you know, but
yeah. Fallon's a prankster anyway, but you know, come on.
Yeah. But that was that's my three.
Yeah.
Horrible. How much was this? Were they good?
Yeah, they really were. And we're going to, I tell you what, the title of the episode is Why God Why, but we volume one'd it because just like with, we were talking about Wrecking Crew songs mm-hmm. and Beatles songs, the best of this and that and the other. We could do 6, 8, 10 volumes of this kind of episode. When down the road, we'll do some more because just picking out three and you'll
it's
see.
It's difficult.
Well,
except for my first one. That was easy. That's always number one.
Well, it's easy to pick them. It's not right. It's not easy to pick them. It's easy to find them.
Right.
The trick is in saying this one is more worse than this one or whatever, and you'll find in a moment.
That wasn't a trick with that John Legend cover of Happy Christmas.
Well, that's your musical Moby Dick. You bring that up every Christmas, and you bring it up when we talk about it, so there's that. But these other ones, David Lee Roth singing Jump to a Hillbilly Groove is like, no. Just no. Just please no. All right. My numero uno, he wrote it as a tribute to his wife. Now, for that, I guess he gets points from his wife.
and that's the sole person.
That's pretty much it. Yeah. Now, as in, and this is where I have to be careful because it always ends up me sounding like me, and I have that distinctive way of like a caller called in one time when I was doing a live talk show and I was wailing about something, and she refused to go on the air with me and just told the call screener to give me a message. And he did. And I wish I could have gotten her on the line, but she said, "You tell him we've been listening to him for the last half hour and that he thinks that we don't know that he's just calling us stupid, but we know he's calling us stupid." And she hung up the phone and I said, "Well, damn, I wish I could have gotten her on the line. And ma'am, if you're still listening, I apologize because I thought I was making it very clear how stupid you people are." So this is where it kind of gets into the thing. This song, my first choice for Why God Why, was his third number one hit as a solo performer. He was a very successful singer-songwriter in the late 1950s and into the 1960s, but this was the 1970s. And for 50 years, this song has made just about every worst song in the history of popular music list, okay? And women, ladies, we dare you, we triple dog dare you, guys, to sing this in front of any woman in the year 2023 and walk away without any sort of pain in the area of your groin, okay? Let the Seed Be Planted by Paul Anka.
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying how much you love me.
Why, God, why?
Having my baby, what a lovely way of saying what you're thinking of me. The need inside you, I see it showing. Oh, the seed inside you, baby, do you feel it growing?
I swear to God, doesn't that sound to you like a Saturday Night Live sketch of a song, not a real
song? It does in this
song.
Day and age. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, even then, number one for like 5 weeks back in 1977 or whenever that thing was. But here's the funniest part of this, and I had never read this until this past week, where I found a copy of the song. There was a comment thread about it because it was in an article of songs that are considered, oh, my God, okay. And this guy wrote this piece about it. He said, quote, "My friend Kevin remarked to me upon hearing the song for the first time that the second line of the song is, 'What a lovely way of saying how much you love me by having my baby.' My friend Kevin said that he witnessed the birth of both of his daughters, and he assures me that at no time during either did his wife utter anything even remotely close to "what a lovely way."
Good point. I like the "seed inside me" line, inside you line. That was,
yeah. Do you feel it growing? And also, let's not forget the old good right wing Republican wink wink in the '70s swiped that line about "you could have swept it away."
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a little Roe v. Wade going on in that song, Paul Anka, God bless. All right. Just when you thought it couldn't get worse, and we've been all over the place with this guy today. This is real. I didn't make any of this up. He was, as we all know, 1/4 of a group that changed the face of pop music. He inspired a lot of us in our generations to pick up instruments, start singing, maybe even writing songs. He created or co-created dozens of literally classic iconic songs, including a Christmas song that John Legend just butchers the shit out of every year. And in 1969, he married the love of his life, and they released an album. None of Us Were There will ever forget, and it's not the Two Virgins album where they were naked, okay? No matter how hard I try, I can't forget John and Yoko, the wedding album.
Yoko.
The hills are alive.
You know what? And I, you may not believe me when I say this.
You were on that
album. No. I dislike the John Legend song worse than that.
That's it. Because there's a couple of other things that go along with it. It was called the wedding album. It was recorded, and it wasn't a bootleg. It wasn't recorded. It may have been recorded in their garage or their bedrooms, but it was professionally produced and pressed in the Apple Records, Capitol Records, put out with a super glossy cover, LP cover with a nice picture of them from their wedding on the front, and it was white, and it was black with the black and white photography. And it was
John had tape machines at home that he used to do.
Damn the luck.
Yeah.
And that album, in those that you just heard, and by the way, a full version will be available for your delectation. No, not actually. I started to do it because that and some variation of what you just heard them doing in various forms and kind of sort of like that goes on for 46 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Those of us who loved the Beatles in the day, those of us who were big fans of John and or George and or Paul and or Ringo, I got to tell you, die hard, no matter what they do, we were with them. I never forgave John. Never, ever.
I thought you were, for a hot minute, I thought you were going to go to Dear Yoko.
No. Dear Yoko is a cringy song, but it's an honest, affectionate expression of his, and it's catchy.
Yeah,
it's got a beat and a melody,
and the ragtime piano in it is really cool too.
Yeah, but that's just it's tacky, but it's like okay, I can get it. Deal, Yoko. Okay, there you go. But this
Yoko, John Yoko,
dun, dun, and the heartbeat, the constant. All right, I'm not going to beat that to death, but it gets worse. My number three, not nearly as yeehaw as Dave's number three, 1967. Oh, and by the way. Full disclosure, kids, you never stop learning things. I'm like 91 years old now, and I had never heard this song until this week when I started doing research for some of the songs that we wanted to share with you this week. 1967, the Vietnam War was going on hot and heavy, a lot of protests. This piece, it's not a song, it's a spoken word thing. It was written by a guy named Robert R. Thompson. Now, I did some Googling, and other than the fact that he is the writer credit for this thing, I couldn't find any information on him, so I don't know who he is or what he did, except this. The performer was a radio newscaster in Grand Rapids, Michigan. Now, here's the kicker. The record, when released on a national label single, went from number 84, where it came into the Hot 100, and it went to top 10 in just 3 weeks. It sold, now that doesn't mean anything yet, but wait till you hear this thing. It sold a million copies, and this is in the day when there was no streaming, there was no downloading.
Yeah, in the 60s, a million was a big number.
Well, because if nothing else, you had to physically go to a store
to get it
and put money to, so there was some effort involved. You couldn't just slap online and get this thing. And it was nominated for a Grammy for Best Spoken Word Recording. It didn't win, but it was nominated. Now, each of those facts, to me, deserves its own asking of the question.
Why, God, why?
The entire piece runs over 4 minutes. I'm not going to do that to you.
Please don't.
Yet it will be available on the audio files. Okay.
Our companion podcast.
But I've cut it down to about a minute and a half of unequaled, I think with everything we've heard, unequaled, Why, God, Why? Victor Lundberg and An Open Letter to My Teenage Son.
Dear son, you ask my reaction to long hair or beards on young people. Some great men have worn long hair and beards. George Washington and Abraham Lincoln. If to you long hair or a beard is a symbol of independence, if you believe in your heart that the principles of this country, our heritage, is worthy of this display of pride that all men shall remain free, that free men at all times will not inflict their personal limitations of achievement on others, to demand your own rights as well as the rights of others and be willing to fight for this right, you have my blessing. You ask my opinion of draft card burners. I would answer this way. If you doubt that our free enterprise system in the United States is worth protecting, if you doubt the principles upon which this country was founded, that we remain free to choose our religion, our individual endeavors, our method of government, then it's doubtful you belong here. If you are not grateful to a country that gave your father the opportunity to work for his family, to give you the things you've had, then I assume the blame for your failure to recognize the true value of our birthright. Now, I would remind you that your mother will love you no matter what you do, because she is a woman. I love you too, son. But I also love our country and the principles for which we stand. And if you decide to burn your draft card, then burn your birth certificate at the same time. From that moment on, I have no son.
So, Dad, if I can't have the new bike, just tell me.
You want my first reaction? Because I've never heard that before either. You want my initial,
sure,
my initial reaction?
You betcha.
That spoken word sounds like one of the villains on the original Star Trek series from a like a celestial being talking to Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
That's exactly what that reminds me of.
Could very well be. Like, I don't know. This Victor Lundberg was this radio newscaster in Grand Rapids, who had the voice. But if the lines are a little cleaner when you listen to it, your mother will love you no matter what you do. After all, she's a woman.
Yes. But I was getting that feeling like, you know, Kirk and Spock looking at the screen.
You have violated the star border and you have 5 minutes to, otherwise.
Yeah, the little diamond shaped thing is spinning and going, woo, woo. It is like, Captain Kirk, you have violated our airspace.
There will be no negotiation. And if you burn your draft card, burn your birth certificate too, because from that day forward, I have no son,
you heartless bastard.
Oh, yeah. Don't forget the full version available on this week's episode of the Audio Files.
That's awesome.
Oh, man.
And guess what? I still dislike the John Legend song more.
That's some picky shit right there.
You're listening to The Audio Files.
Oh, son, you're still young. You'll naturally grow out of seeing the bright side of things.
That's right, and your wife will be right there to help you.
Hey, let's because see what, she's a woman.
That's right. W-O-M-A-N.
The Dave Files.
It has a beat that moves right along, too. Listen.
1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1.
Rock and roll!
Well, I'm pretty excited to introduce this for you because here's the thing from the files this week, and he's multifaceted. We don't get a chance to use that term very much, but I say, hey, here's another side of Dave Simmons.
Defenses shine from inside. Fight off the urge, surrender all pride. And I should march.
You know what?
What?
I like that.
You like that song?
I do, and I don't think I've ever heard that before.
Yeah, that's off of our Enjoy the Buffet album, but the reason I brought that up, over the last few weeks, we've been looking at Beatles songs, looking at Neil Diamond songs, talking about the Wrecking Crew. Well, that song was the time I sat down to write a Beatles song, and I was going to write an updated version of The Two of Us.
Okay.
With a with a three-part harmony or a two-part harmony all the way through the song.
Uh-huh.
So I went ahead and started working, came up with a chord pattern and came up with a melody. Then I started writing lyrics. And it ended up not being a conventional song because it doesn't have like the traditional pre-chorus, chorus. You know, it structurally, it's not, I think you, as a songwriter, you probably notice that structurally, it's not structured like a regular pop song would be structured.
It's not structured in the context of where you were originally headed, but I think what you ended up with, what I'm hearing is, once you say Two of Us, and I'm going, then there you go, but it's also got and I'm not picking, zoning in on any other band in particular, but let's say, you know, the Maroon 5 kind of that more contemporary groove is what you ended up getting with that flavor in the first place, which is fine.
Yeah, I kind of revisited that album that we had worked on, and that album is 15 years old.
By the way, you should mention, because I didn't, because you've got so many different myriaded activities going on. Which band is that?
Oh, that's Engine Number 9.
There you go.
We put out an album, the vocalist on it, Chris Myers, he passed away, two Christmases ago. So, he missed him terribly. Great, great singer. But we used to close our original shows. We used to do original music showcases.
Mm-hmm.
We would close the show with that, with just an acoustic guitar, and I had a shaker, and we would get around the mic.
Yeah, there you go.
And
yeah,
without all the instrumentation, you know, after a high energy set, that's how we would walk off the stage.
Simplicity.
So it was. But being that we were talking about, you know, the Wrecking Crew writers and things like that, I was like, I remember the time I sat down to write a Beatles song. Didn't quite turn out the way, but I was happy with the way that it turned out.
Well, and by the way, I understand, I'm not sure, there was an unconfirmed rumor flying around for a long time. Check eBay, because there might be. There was a promotional 45 single of that was released, and you should get that if you can, because on the flip side, Engine Number 9 does their interpretation of a thing called An Open Letter to My Teenage Son.
Yes. And oddly enough, Scott, that song didn't take that long to write. I wrote that thing in like an afternoon.
The best ones always come.
Yes, but sometimes songs take weeks or even years to write. I've heard stories. And sometimes they don't take long at all.
Not at all.
And Scott has a story.
What were the odds?
Here's a story.
December 1958, Brownsville, Pennsylvania. I remember it well.
Brownsville,
Pennsylvania. The show, the singer-songwriter and his band and his backup singers were performing, and I've never heard this expression. I did a lot of this, and Dave's done a lot of this. They call it a meal dance. I never heard to it referred to.
I've never heard that.
The band plays 4 hours with a half hour break, and they wrap it up around 1 a.m. That's kind of your standard dance hall
gig,
but they called it meal dance in this particular case. Well, the singer and his band and his backup singers had played their whole repertoire and then some after midnight, but they still had contractually about 12 minutes to fill. So, and this has all been documented by the singer and the author of several biographies and all that. So this is not one of them apocryphal stories. There's your word to look up this week, kids, apocryphal. The singer turned to his band and his backup singers, and he said, listen, I'm just going to fool around, and y'all just follow me. In other words, we're just going to jam for 12 minutes. Well, they did, he did, and for the rest of his career, he closed every show with the song, and the record, number one on the R&B chart, top 10 on the Hot 100 chart, his first gold record and Atlantic Records best-selling record at the time. The old saying is that you can't make this shit up. Well, given what happened in Brownsville, Pennsylvania in 1958, obviously you can make it, because Ray Charles made that shit up, and what do you say to that?
See the girl with the red dress on. She can do the burlet all night long. Yeah, yeah. What I say? All right.
By the way, here's a test of old age, depending on your generation. If you hear that and you've got younger people around you who hear that, here's how you know when you're pretty old. Either your kids, but by now even your grandkids. If they hear that and they go,
well, that's pretty cool. That guy, whoever that guy is, he's doing cover of that really cool song from Tommy Boy.
Then you know you're dealing with young people.
That is true. I'm trying to find, I can't remember the guy's name that produced, he produced a lot of that stuff. Engineered and produced. Mm-hmm. They did an interesting documentary on him. Actually, he actually produced Eric Clapton, too. He produced Layla. I can't remember his name.
Not Tom Dowd.
Tom Dowd, yes.
Was it Tom Dowd?
Yeah. But did you see his documentary?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, my God. Like, he actually worked on the Manhattan Project. You know, he was...
That's a successful song and a bomb all at the same time.
Tom Dowd, he had an interesting career. I was trying to look it up.
Never had heard or read the story about how What I Say came about. And it was one of those songs, I don't know about you guys in your generation, but in our generation, that was one of the 10 or 15 absolutely essential garage band dance hall songs because there was nothing to it. It was just an easy groove and a dance tune that people loved. And
that music was a big influence on the Beatles.
Oh, sure.
Huge, huge influence on the Beatles. I don't know if they ever did a cover of that particular song.
Live they did. I think in some of the BBC recordings or some of those things, but they never released it. But I just thought it was interesting that it was made up on the spot to fill 12 minutes because that's what they did.
That's pretty cool.
It is cool.
Well, that's better than having to do what you did in your early band days where you had to play the one song over and over and over again.
There was two songs.
Oh, two songs.
In the Midnight Hour and Knock on Wood. For an audience that was going to kill us if we played, don't play that monkey shit. Oh, there's that.
Scott Edward Phelps, Dave Simmons, The Audiophiles.
Tell those musicians to start playing some action music because it is on.
Action, the Wrecking Crew. When we did our Wrecking Crew special, we talked about the fact that statistically, if you put all the claims together, there's supposedly somewhere between 30 and 35,000 tracks between the years of whatever and whatever in which these guys performed and played on. So we thought, well, we'll just do one per week as kind of a fun feature, and in 35,000 weeks, we'll be all done. There you go. And occasionally throw in a little Engine Number 9 or
there
something.
There we
go. All right, so we take turns. My turn this week. This week's Wrecking Crew song, the song often makes, and it kind of keeps with theme, it often makes both the most popular and the most ridiculous and or worst lists at the same time. The song was inspired by a joke that kids used to tell, a little elementary school level joke. It was recorded by an actor who was in a popular Western TV series in the early 1960s, and he was also in the Oscar-winning movie High Noon. Now, the Wrecking Crew laid down the backing track, the singer sang the track, and then they turned it into the Suits at MGM Records, who turned it down, saying, quote, "This is not the kind of music with which we want to be identified," unquote. But the demo of the song, in those days, they made what they called acetates, which was a disc, wax disc like a record, but you could only play it 10, 20 times. And those were what they used for demos. The demo of that song became so popular in the New York office of MGM Records, the staff, 50-plus people, were all sitting around listening to it at lunchtime in the cafeteria. So the suit said, well, perhaps we can reevaluate our circumstance and issued this. That's the suits. The song, once released, was not only number one for over a month in America and Canada, but it made the top 20 on the R&B chart. The singing Western actor was named Shelby Frederick Woolley, better known as Sheb. The hit TV show he was in was Rawhide, and the joke that inspired the song? Well, like I said, it was a kid's joke. I'm going to spring it on Dave. Hey, Dave, what's purple and eats people? A purple people eater.
It was a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. Sure looks strange to me.
One-eyed?
Really went on his way, and then what do you know? I saw him last night on a TV show. He was blowing it out, really knocking him dead. Playing rock and roll music through the horn in his head.
Tequila.
And if you don't know, Tequila was a popular song at the time as well.
Now, Sheb Woolley was, he wasn't, I know Eastwood was like the second in command. Mm-hmm. Sheb Woolley was like the third guy in command, right? Tall and skinny?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know which one he is.
And I can't remember, his real name was Shelby Woolley, and they called him Sheb. He also had a quote-unquote stage name, Ben Colder, and I'm not sure whether he used that. He was one of the bad guy outlaws in the movie High Noon with Gary Cooper.
Along with Lee Van Cleef.
Lee Van Cleef.
Yes.
But he had that song, and I remember that was 58, 59. I was 7, 8 years old. I can remember being on the swings in the elementary school playground, swinging back and forth as high as we could go, singing one-eyed, one-tailed, flying purple people eater at the top of our voices.
Yep.
And wasn't nearly as obnoxious as it might have been to our parents. I'm sure it wasn't anywhere near as obnoxious as John Legend's version of Happy Christmas.
You know who produced that session?
The purple friend? People eater?
Yeah, did Jimmy Webb produce that?
I don't know.
Yeah, and I you didn't tell me what it was going to be, so I couldn't do any research.
I know. Well, part of the reason I do that when I do what I do with those things is because it's more fun. I get to spring them on you, and then there's kind of a thing stuff you don't know, and you don't know, so it's,
Yeah.
There's a method to the madness.
That is true. Well,
meanwhile,
when it comes to opinions about music, Scott.
Yes.
Everyone is entitled to our opinion.
Yeah.
So it's time for Rate a Record.
All right.
My favorite part of the show, actually.
Yes. Well, yes. We're going to have some fun. And I pulled a switcheroo. We were going to do one. Now we're doing another. And the other reason is because just a couple of days ago, and it's no big deal of shock or surprise, Kelly Clarkson has a new album coming shortly.
I'm Kelly Clarkson.
I like her. She's got great chops.
Great voice.
And yeah, there you go. And she's a fun chick as far as it goes. Her little TV show is just as adorable as the day is long. She's got an album coming. She dropped two singles simultaneously. One is called Mine. The other is called Me. Sense of theme going here. Dave and I have given them a listen, and then we're going to tell you why you should or shouldn't like it as we rate. Oh, by the way, you're not going to hear any break in between the two, but I think you'll understand when it goes from one to the other. Mine is the first song. Me is the second song, and it's Kelly Clarkson.
You know I question every motive, everything you say. Thought with you maybe my heart wasn't meant to break. Can't believe I let you in, I can't believe I stay. As long as I stay, yeah. I hope one day someone will take your heart and hold it tight. Make you feel like you're invincible deep inside. And right when you think that it's perfect, they cross a line and steal your shine like you did mine. Go ahead and break my heart, that's fine. So buried myself into somebody else. Shut out some parts of me, did it so casually. I guess I needed that to be able to step back. I lived my life without me, I never allowed me to too much I've had to live for, put my life on hold for. I'm always pleasing someone, honestly now I'm done. I don't need somebody to hold me, don't need somebody to love me, don't need somebody to pick these pieces up when I got me.
Okay.
Well, the second song, Me.
Very gospely there.
Yes, when it's that was what I was getting ready to say. When it starts, I was waiting for Prince to go, "Dearly beloved," because it just starts with that organ. Uh-huh. I actually like Me better than Mine.
Okay,
if that makes any sense.
I like Mine too, but no.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to say yay for Me.
Yay!
And what else you got for Mine?
Half ass yay, what else you got, or why was it? What else you got?
What else you got?
Okay.
What else you got?
Okay. I must have subconsciously wanted to say on the front end that I like Kelly Clarkson, otherwise this was going to sound, and there's no way that I can offer my 2 cents here and not sound like the old fart fogey guy, because Kelly Clarkson has become synonymous. Her fan base is indestructible, and whatever she does is, you know, and that's fine. I said for years, there's a lot of recording artists that Kenny Rogers got to a point in that point in his career. If Kenny Rogers could have sung the phone book, and the Kenny Rogers fans would have thought it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it was whether it was shit or not. I don't have any problem with either one of the songs. I'm not hearing anything out of the ordinary. Her
right.
performance is exemplary, but she's a great singer, so that's going to happen no matter what she sings. If I have any kind of nit to pick, it's this. And this is where we can get into trouble a little bit, but what do I care? I'm all about Me Too. I'm all about, I believe it or not, and those of you who can't know me, because you haven't known me very long if you know me at all, but all my life, I haven't been a flag-waving, banner-carrying champion in the streets, but I was a non-anti-misogynist, anti-stop-treating-women-like-shit kind of guy, probably because of my upbringing, my dad and mom's.
Yeah.
And I use the term loosely, marriage.
Well, as long as I've known you, you've been like that.
Yeah. And so, so there's that, just by way of qualifying what I'm about to say. And that's to say that there comes a time, lately, this seems to be the thing, whether it's because the door and the windows are now open and people are paying more attention. And that's why more and more singers and songwriters are focusing in on that. But I'm still always looking for the fresh way of coming at it. We talked a few weeks back about Miley Cyrus'
"I Could Buy Myself Flowers," which was a creative way to come at it.
Lyrically interesting and not just the same old "I'm going to be me, I got to be me" kind of thing. And
right.
And it was melodically interesting. Mm-hmm. These are two reasonably okay melodies, and she's singing "mine and me and I and me and me and mine, and I'm going to stand up for me." And I applaud the sentiment, but at some point,
right, right.
I say to myself, you know, so I'm not going to, it's a half-ass yay.
Yay.
Okay, but here's the thing that really annoys me, and I'm going to say this as a full disclosure thing, okay? What really annoys me about it is I don't like country music anymore and haven't for a long time because of a lot of the shit that they're shoveling in Nashville. And I wasn't crazy about the 70s talking about Lee Greenwood either, but there have been periods along the way. And then I do genuinely still love and respect the original pioneer country music.
Right.
But that said, I don't listen to country music anymore. I don't like it. And I didn't like it from about 1985 on. And listening to Kelly Clarkson talking about me and mine and mine and me and that whole thing that's going on, I'll tell you what it is. This is for all you guys who are out there who are enough already with the ladies singing about me and mine and my and all the things related to me and mine and my and me when it comes to the women, one song after another, and it really annoys me. Because it makes me want to listen to God Help Me, Toby Keith.
You. You're listening to The Audiophiles.
I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me. I want to talk about number one. Oh, my. What I think, what I like, what I know, what I want, what I see. I like talking about you, usually. But occasionally, I want to talk about me. I want to talk about me.
What are you talking about?
I liked the little yodel you put in there. Me.
That song was written by Bobby Braddock. look up Bobby Braddock and the Google Kids. He's an old pioneer country music songwriter. I know he's not an old man, but what I'm talking about. But he also has written in recent years a lot of fun, fresh angle. That song is genius. And
yes,
the whole song is available on the Companion podcast, and you'll get a kick out of it. It's just, it's almost a rap, but it's not. And Toby Keith, credit where it's due. He picked it and he took it on. But we talk about your clothes. We talk about your life. We talk about your hoes. We're going to talk about your mama. But every now and then. And so that's my two cents as far as Kelly Clarkson's Mind Me.
Well, concerned. You know, it's, you know what amazes me about the Kelly Clarkson thing? Do you remember who the runner up was the year she won American Idol?
I do not.
Justin Guarini.
Okay.
Their careers took very drastic pathways. She's had number one hits.
He went nowhere and she went everywhere.
Well, actually, no. He's Little Sweet.
Oh, really?
In the Dr. Pepper commercials.
Well,
you know, the little small guy that sings? That's Justin Guarini.
Okay. Well, if it pays the rent, you know, I'm the last person in the world equivalent.
He's amazing at that.
You know what? We should investigate. There's a whole lot of, after all these years, there's probably a number of interesting, and we would have primarily contemporary music in the show if we did an episode on American Idols, Where Are They Now? Because there are a lot, there's not a lot. There's a select few that really hit big. Kelly Clarkson, Carrie Underwood,
et
cetera. And there's a few that kind of...
The one I thought was going to be huge was, he was huge at the time, Raymond Stoddard.
Yeah, again.
He sounded like Luther Vandross.
It would be interesting to research that and see. Even if we have to talk about how creepy it is that Catherine McPhee sleeps with David Foster. But that's a whole different story.
Yeah, isn't he like 80?
Foster?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's at least 80.
And she's got to be 40.
She's like 14.
Yeah.
It just had a kid.
I think she's a little bit older than that now.
Well, yeah. She's in her, I think she's gently nudging 40. But and God bless, and it's none of my business.
Hey,
and,
it's good work if you can get it.
Well, you know, if I'd have known it would have gotten me Catherine McPhee, I'd have taken the third damn piano lesson. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't have given it up. Let's do 6 degrees.
6 degrees of SEP.
All right, I'm just name dropping all over the place this week. Why? Because I can. And this kind of steers us back for momentarily in the direction of, and I didn't tell Dave what was coming because I wanted to get his fun reaction too.
Sure.
This goes back to the Why God Weiss, Why God Why.
Why God Why? If you have John Lennon or John Legend in this story.
I don't, actually. I got just about everybody. I got one that it trumps John Legend for me, but I don't have the pathological hatred for that song that you do. Or for that version. Tony Migliore, you don't know his name, it's okay. World-class pianist, keyboardist. He was a child prodigy of sorts. He started out at Juilliard as a child. He studied piano, theory, composition. He continued his studies at the Eastman School of Music in Rochester. Later on, he went to serve as pianist and arranger for the Military Academy Band at West Point. And during that period, he worked on Broadway shows and off-Broadway shows. After he finished his military service, he moved to Nashville, where he started working for Chet Atkins as his piano player. Then Chet started to do more symphonic, including the symphony, in his concerts. So Tony was tapped to begin becoming the arranger for Chet Atkins, and he worked for him for 20 years doing arrangements for Chet and assorted other artists. In the early 90s, which by that time I had met Tony, because he was also part owner of a recording studio in Nashville. It was associated. Billy Strange had an office there, and I was signed to write songs for Billy Strange. So Tony was part of the gang, and Tony played piano on all our demo sessions.
Right.
But he also became the concert pianist for show pianist for Don McLean of American Pie fame. Now, I haven't talked to Tony in years, and this reminded me I need to reach out because TikTok time goes on. But he's a world-class piano player as well as a producer. He was the producer on the stuff that I did with my friend Cyril Rawson that hit all the stuff in the Canadian charts and made us all 20, 30 bucks. But he also worked on the road with a guy who recorded a song written by Bobby Russell. Bobby Russell is the 60s, 70s songwriter who wrote, among other things, Vicki Lawrence's Night the Lights Went Out in Georgia, Little Green Apples, the O.C. Smith song, mm-hmm. If That's a Loving Me.
You sound like Charles Emerson Winchester trying to sing.
That was exactly what I was going for. And this particular record I'm alluding to was produced by, because Dave's asking about producers this week for some strange reason, Bob Shane of the Kingston Trio, who I actually phone interviewed some years ago. I'll dredge that up one of these days. This record spent 5 weeks at number one in 1968. Tony was his keyboardist on the road. I don't think Tony's on the record. 5 weeks at number one.
5 weeks.
Was then and is to this day a record that inspires millions to ask on, oh, so many levels, the musical question.
Why, God, why?
Yeah.
She was always young at heart, kind of dumb and kind of smart, and I loved her so. And I surprised her with a puppy, kept me up all Christmas Eve 2 years ago. And honey, I miss you, and I'm being good, and I'd love to be with you if only I could. One day while I was not at home, while she was there and all alone, the angels came. Now all I have is memories of honey, and I wake up nights and call her name. Now my life's an empty stage where honey lived and honey played. Small cloud passes overhead and cries down on the flower bed that honey loved. And see the tree, how big it's grown, but friend, it hasn't been too long.
Since 1968, I've done everything humanly possible, whenever possible, to avoid hearing that song. And it's just 5 weeks at number one. And I get it. It's pure schlock. If it was just being released today, it would be the theme song for at least 3 to 5 Lifetime television movie specials.
It had the Glen Campbell feel, and that was popular at that time.
Yeah, but it just, but here's some things that I noticed this past week, because I haven't heard it for a long time, God bless. And then re-listening to it for edit purposes. And by the way, don't be distressed, ladies. The full version is available on the audio files, the companion podcast. But these lyric lines jumped out at me in the year 2023. She almost hurt herself, and I laughed till I cried. Kind of dumb and kind of smart. Like that, ladies? And this one especially caught my notice, because it's the big climax there with the angel thing in the background. One day when I was not at home and she was there and all alone, the angels came. And suddenly it dawned on me. Did honey perhaps wait until he went to work and then put a gun in her mouth because she realized that she was married to a masochistic, misogynist dickweed who thought it was funny that she almost fell down?
I don't know. Was honey the wife or the dog?
Oh, now we're going to get into, okay, well, maybe it was Shannon. If we take Shannon and overlay it on honey, then we're going to.
I wondered, I've heard that song before.
Yeah, sorry.
I always wondered if he was talking about the dog.
I've never heard that theory, but you know, let's review the lyric and see.
He never specifies.
Well, now that makes an interesting twist to the line about he surprised her with a puppy, kept him up all Christmas Eve 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think he's talking about the dog.
Well, we may have a Paul is dead type conspiracy thing on our hands here. We're going to have to investigate that. All I can say is, and that would make more sense because obviously from the things that he's saying about laughing at her when she almost fell down and calling her dumb, the guy was a dick.
Yeah, but I mean, I think he's talking about the dog.
All right. Look forward to, we'll work on that for next week.
You know, because when he was alone, she, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Food for thought.
Now I'm going to use an inordinate amount of brain cells I can't afford to spare thinking about that shit, trying to figure out what's going on with
Dave Simmons, Scott Edward Phelps, The Audio Files.
Write me one about a nice, normal woman who just shoots her husband.
There we go. It's time to play Guess Who.
Guess Who?
Who are you?
Who?
What the hell's that?
Who?
Who are those guys?
Who is this?
All right. I also don't tell Dave what the song is each week, because if I did, it would kind of defeat the whole purpose of saying Guess Who.
That is true.
There you go. All right. I'm just going to tell you this. You're going to recognize the song immediately. It's not Randy Newman.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to tell you.
Is it a woman?
Dave Simmons. That's entirely for you to figure out. Dave Simmons, come on down and guess who?
Your people got more reason. Your people got more reason. Your people got more reason to live. They got quicker hands and quicker eyes. They're built lower to the ground, a better balance for the size. They eat much less food, they breathe much less air. Yeah. Much smarter with the money and only pay half fare. Well, I just want more shore people. Must have more shore people. I need shore people.
As we wait to see how much Dave wagered.
He had
still got me hung up on the dog.
He had a very Buddy Hackett draw.
Let me tell you, I know who it is, but I hadn't heard him do it until I heard him do it, and it's from a live show that he did at the time. And here's what I heard, and I'm going to tell you because it's not any of these three, but I'll tell you what his voice sounds like to me. It sounds like Adam Sandler trying to be Leon Russell, trying to be Dr. John.
Well,
all
yeah.
across. And now throw in a little bit of the Buddy Hackett.
Like when it first started, I was like, that's Buddy Hackett.
Yeah.
And then he morphed into,
Yeah.
Entertainer or musician?
He dabbles in music, but he's not primarily known
for
that.
Okay, so he's entertainer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah. As opposed to his main claim to fame, not his music.
Right.
Or his performing of music either. It's a long shot. You probably won't get it.
Yeah, I don't have any clue.
Okay. He's been around forever. We know him from lots and lots of different things, but the first time we ever laid eyes and ears on him was probably in 1975 on the premiere episode when he was the very first anchor Weekend Update.
Good evening. I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not.
That's right.
And
this was his, it was a whole album. He actually did an album in those late 70s.
Well, Chevy Chase was a very good drummer.
Well, he's on the piano. That's him playing the piano.
So he played piano too. He was Steely Dan's first drummer. They weren't called Steely Dan.
Yeah.
But they were a jazz group and he was their drummer. So yeah.
But he was obviously making fun of his own singing voice with the Buddy Hackett meets Adam Sandler meets. still thinking about that damn dog.
Yeah, you know.
Two guys who know tunes. Talking tunes. The Audiophiles.
And now, the grand finale.
So that's it? Gone? Boo-hoo?
Well, you know, it's a relative term. Time for Dave's extremely growing list of...
Go first. You've got your...
I was going to mention my other podcast, 45 RPM, which is my 45 RPM, not any of the 55 other... I got to find a new name for that show. There's too many. It's with me, Scott Edward Phelps, and it's available any place you find your podcast, including wherever you find this one. Actually, there's a new episode up this week. It's called Beatle Bargain Bin Volume 2. It's the second in a series that I was working on. It's Beatles songs, but not. It's about them, tributes to them, songs that were made during Beatlemania by every Tom, Dick, and Harry. It's real archival stuff, and there's a whole lot of really entertaining
things. You have Shatner in there? Lucy in the Sky.
Actually not, because I always try to find the things that are less known, lesser known than that. There are quite a few.
My God!
In there, but just
I love the Lucy in the Sky. Lucy in the Sky.
Oh, sure. Well, Mr. Overacting.
Oh, that's great.
And he's gone.
And he's gone. And funny that you mentioned Beatles because, you know, I think George Harrison passed away a bunch of years ago and he never shopped at Earl Teague Music and he's still dead. So
it was 22 years ago. He died in 2001.
Yes. It's been a long time.
He died shortly after 9/11.
Yes. Yeah, it's crazy. Anyway, Earl Teague Music, two locations. If you need any kind of musical instrument, strings.
And want to go on living,
strings, guitars, drums, keyboards, Dover, Delaware, Delmar, Delaware. Check them out online. I'd love to thank Trinity Cymbals. They had a great time out at NAMM. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be there. a lot of celebrities in their booth.
Well, you got too many damn irons in the fire now.
Now I'm actually, I'm going next year. I don't care what happens. I'm going to block out my schedule. A lot of celebrities in the booth. So look up trinitysymbols.com online. I'd like to thank Robbie and Lynn for sponsoring me, and Sam at HHG Drums. Great drum manufacturer.
Yes.
Amazing stuff. And I got something else I'll probably bring up next week. But other than that, and make our Indonesian friends happy.
Uh-huh. Always with the tease.
I'm teasing.
Always with the tease.
I am definitely teasing.
It's a big showbiz tease.
You got anything else, Scott?
No, that's all. Except to take us out this week, we leave you with a little shout out. I pondered how to do it. I actually found a piece of music. You know what? I'll tell you about it next week. There's my tease. It has nothing to do with where we're going right now.
So you're not playing what you... I had a question before. Did you see the Phil Spector documentary on Showtime?
Sure.
The four-part? I just watched it. I didn't even realize there was one.
Yeah.
Was that crazy?
Yeah.
That was some crazy stuff.
Well, that was Phil Spector.
But my favorite part was Carol Kane saying, you know, I felt like we were all on trial there for the music that we made. Yeah.
Well, Phil was a unique individual.
Yeah, but she brought herself into the murder case because she has to talk about, Carol Kay has to talk about Carol Kay.
Sure.
Yeah. That's what she does.
Yes. And nobody, as Carly sang a long time ago, nobody does it better. Bless her heart.
That is too funny.
All right. Taking us out, we leave you with a shout out to all the guys out there whose girlfriends and wives and assorted other life mates are filled with the energy and bravery it takes to stand up for themselves, because we're all about it and we're all behind it. And sing out, man, if you want to, what you need to and what you want to do and expect. And ladies, we dedicate this one to you because we hear you. And coming up, well, gosh darn it, this is what we hear from you.
I'm Dave Simmons.
And I'm Scott Edward Phelps. And we are
the Audiophiles.
After the day, I'm in mine. All through the night, I'm in mine.
The Audiophiles is produced in the United States of America. Questions, comments, and witty banter welcome. Audiophilesbroadcast@gmail.com. The Audiophiles.
Newsflash, it isn't always about you.